Senator Ortman.
Madam President, I move that the Senate that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with, and the Sergeant at Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Today's chaplain is Reverend Martin Erickson from Como Park Lutheran Church in St. Paul. And following the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I am Pastor Erickson from Como Park Lutheran Church in St. Paul, a congregation of the ELCA, where we pray for the members of this chamber with great regularity. Join me now as we pray for the people of the state of Minnesota and for the work of this place. Justice, mercy, and love, turn our hearts to the people of this state and work your might to make us one people, one Minnesota, united in purpose, direction, and common values for all. Turn our hearts to the needs that are before us. Work your might that leaders in these halls might reconcile the many points of views and differences that divide us. Save us from arrogance, entitlement, and pride. Work your might within these halls that the tools of government might be brought to bear on employment across this state so that we might create meaningful work and opportunity for all. Work your might within these halls for the sake of our children and our workforce in education and job training, that we might prepare people for employment, for meaningful service, and full citizenship. Work your might amongst and through these leaders so that with common purpose they might address the issues of this day. Give them wisdom in taxation, bonding, finance, and spending. Enlighten them with visions and plans for health care, housing, and education, and all of our infrastructure needs to fix what is broken and strengthen what is strong for the benefit of all. And after the strife of deliberation is over, give these your servants peace, that in their rest they might truly know that they have strived to do your will for all Minnesotans and for you. Amen.
Public for which it stands, one nation.
Secretary will take the roll.
Senators Bach, Benson, Bonhoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Cohen, Dames, Daly, DeKreif, Dibble, Dietzick, Eaton, Fischbach, Gazelka, Gerlach, Gimsey, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Harrington, Hayden, Higgins, Hoffman, Howe, Ingebrigtsen, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Kunin, Cruz, Langseth, Latz, Lilly, Limmer, Laurie, Magnus, Marty, McGuire, Metzen, Michelle, Miller, Nelson, Nino, Newman, Nino, Olson, Ortman, Pappas, Perry, Peterson, Reinert, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Saxog, Senjum, Sharon, Siebenskoy, Sparks, Stump, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres, Ray, Vandeveer, Wieger, Wolf.
A quorum is present. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. I'd move to the third order of business. Messages from the House.
Senator Ortman, I believe we were going to recess.
We are going to recess, Madam President. I'm sorry, I thought we were taking up a few items before that, or motions and resolutions. We can do that later. Thank you, Madam President. Then, Madam President, I would move to recess to the call of the chair.
On Senator Ortman's motion to recess to call of the chair, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. We are in recess. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant of Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving to the third order of business, the messages from the House. The Secretary will read the first message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate files herewith returned. Senate File 2112. Relating to claims against the state, Senate File 2316, relating to veterans, Senate File 2354, relating to state government. Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There's no Senate action necessary on that message. Secretary will read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which the amendments, the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File number 946, a bill for an act relating to education. Senate File 946 is herewith returned to the Senate. Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator DeKreif.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the Senate do not concur with the amendments
by the House in Senate File 946, and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the subcommittee on conference committees on the part of the Senate to act like a conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Secretary will read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House file. Herewith transmitted, House file number 2232, Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There is no Senate action necessary on that message. Moving to the fourth order of business, the first reading of House bills. They are printed on page 2 of today's Senate agenda. They will be referred as indicated. First reading. Moving to the fifth order of business, reports of committee. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I move the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving to the seventh order of business, the second reading of House bills. There are several printed on page 3 of today's agenda. Second reading. Moving to the eighth order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's Senate bill introductions. They will be referred as indicated. First reading. Moving to motion, ninth order of business, motions and resolutions. There are two Senate resolutions, number 153 and 154, printed on today's Senate agenda. They will be referred to rules. Remaining under motions and resolutions, we will take up several conference committee reports. The first one is Senate File 2392, Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, ma'am. I move that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on Senate File 2392 now be adopted and that the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee.
To that motion, Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Madam President, members. This is the conference committee report on the omnibus liquor bill. And it was not a contentious conference committee at all, but we did make some changes and adopted some of each other's provisions. There were at least one or maybe a couple items of in the House bill that we did not have, but that we accepted. I'll say that, members, first of all, the Section 1 was Senator Howe's provision on bulk wine, and we went along and accepted the House language, but accomplishing the same thing. Section 2 was a provision that we accepted that previously we did not have, and it had to do with the simple fact that farm wineries are technically not required to be on a farm or agricultural land. And so the House had proposed some language to cement that requirement in law. We did some wordsmithing with Senator Howe's help in committee and came up with something that worked. Everybody was in agreement on the concept, and we accepted that. The next section was the TCF Stadium, and that was identical in both bills. Also, Senator Howe's provision on wine festivals and the off-sale of six bottles or less was identical in both bills. And Hall, with the wine educator provisions, there were two items that were different, and the House accepted the Senate position in full on that piece. Both of Senator Latz's provisions dealing with marketing merchandise and also tastings were identical in both bills. Senator Rosen's provision on the Winnebago out-of-state craft brewers, we had different language in both bills, and it was agreed upon that the House language would be accepted, and in addition, a sunset was accepted, was an amendment offered in conference committee on that for this provision to expire on December 31st to be sure that this accomplishes what they want to do, and they will be able to continue that and review that in the future. The next section was identical on both sides, was the Langseth Bluestem Art Theater. That was Senator Langseth, and that was identical. Senator Higgins' provision was identical in both bills and accepted. And members, those were all of the changes made in the conference committee report. I would urge your adoption of this. Thank you.
Senator Reiner.
Thank you, Madam President. And I just wanted to add in, as the DFL member on the conference committee, despite the absence of my cherished Sunday sales provision, this is a good bill. Chair Gerlach did a good job chairing the conference committee, and I would encourage my members to vote yes as well.
Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam President. Under Rule 41.2, I'd like to be excused from voting.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Further discussion on Gerlach's motion to adopt the conference committee report. Seeing none, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. The Secretary will give Senate File 2392 its third reading.
Senate File Number 2392, a bill for an act relating to liquor, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 2392. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 55 ayes and 3 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Meeting under motions and resolutions, we'll take up the next conference committee report. Senate File 1750, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on Senate File 1750 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed and amended by the conference committee.
To that motion, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam President. First, I'd like to thank Senator Skoy and Senator Ingebrigtsen for being on the conference committee with me. There was only a couple small minor differences between the House and the Senate version.
The House version had some late amendments on for St. Louis County land transfers that we didn't have before we passed our bill much earlier. The other thing had to do with the process for transferring land from the Boundary Water Canoe area that contains the school trust lands. And so what we did is we set up a framework for how that process will work. There was a slight difference in the language between the House version and the Senate version. We satisfied that, and I guess I'll stand for questions.
Discussion of Senator Carlson's motion to adopt the conference committee report. Senator Higgins.
Madam President, would Senator Carlson yield?
Senator Carlson will yield. Senator Higgins.
And with a smile on his face. Senator Carlson, you said there was slight differences on the Boundary Waters land swap. Would you give us detail rather than just tell us there were differences?
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam President, and thank you for the question, Senator Higgins. On the House language, they wanted an exact land acre for acre swap, and in the House version, we were okay with some land for land and some purchase to be able to expedite the process with the federal government. What the compromise language was, we called it the goal. So the goal would be to try to get as many acres back and forth with the federal government as we could, but it still leaves open the possibility to be able to do land for cash.
Further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Senator Carlson renews his motion. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. The Secretary will give Senate File 1750 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1750, a bill for an act relating to natural resources, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1750. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 52 ayes and 11 nays, the bill has passed and its title agreed to. Remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Senjum. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate the following bills to be made special orders for immediate consideration. And Madam President, these are the bills so noted in the sheet on your desk.
Senator Senjum has designated the sheet available on your desk dated 4/21/2012 as special orders. We will begin with number 87 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 2090, Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. Senate File 2090 deals with current statute which requires that if a state agency is going to hire a firm outside of the state government to fulfill a professional or technical service contract, the government first has to make a determination as to whether there is an employee currently working within the agency that could perform the duty, or that someone that has been employed within the last 4 years is able to do it. What this bill would do if enacted into law is it would relieve commissioners of that requirement and allow commissioners the ability to just make a determination that moving a task outside of the state
Madam
government.
Madam President.
Senator Higgins.
Could you please get the room under control? I can't hear, can't see even who's talking.
Thank you, Senator Higgins. Members and staff, it really is loud in here, and if we could take conversations outside, I would appreciate it. Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. So the bottom line is what Senate File 2090 does is it allows commissioners the opportunity to just enter into contracts to get technical and professional services performed without first going through a somewhat onerous exercise to determine whether somebody would be qualified to do that within the state government under current law as it's constituted. There have been no commissioners, no one within the administration that has taken a position on this. The only opposition I'm aware of has come from labor organizations who believe that this would disadvantage some public servants, and I would respectfully ask for your yes vote to allow the commissioners in any administration to determine what is the most cost-effective way to get services performed.
Further discussion, Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam President. And this bill is really a problem. It's not only a problem for the labor groups that talk to you, Senator Thompson, but it's also a problem for the Department of Administration. I wish you would have looked a little bit at the background behind this issue, because a few years ago, there was a provision in law that said that not only did they have to make sure that they had a state employee, that they didn't have a state employee that was able and available to do the work, but they also had to post those jobs at the Department of Economic Security for 30 days before they were allowed to contract out for them. Those provisions were taken out to make it a little easier for agencies to contract when they need to. But what this provision, why this provision was left in there, is because we do have some state employees that work for other agencies, and on an intergovernment transfer, they can do a job that would otherwise cost 2 to 3 to 4 times more to hire a contractor. And the reason it would cost more is because the contractor has to make a profit and the state employee doesn't. So we have some very well trained and educated people in our government, in our agencies, that can do this work. Now, the second thing that's really crazy about this bill is taking out the provision that says that we have to make sure that the contractor then trains the staff to do the ongoing work. That only makes sense, and what you're doing here is spending an awful lot of unnecessary money, because when we do a big computer project here like Health Match or one of those, what happens is that what they were doing in the past, contractors were not training, and it wasn't in the contract that they had to train the staff to use the systems that they were developing. When you don't use the system or train people to use the system that the contractor is developing, you have an ongoing dependency on that contractor that is totally unnecessary. And I want you to start looking at what the hourly rates are for IT people and some of the other analysts and so forth that are contracted for now, because what you will find if you look very closely at the state agencies is that there are contractors on staff that even the employees that work by them don't know that they're contractors. They've been there so long, they've been paid, or their company has been paid so much more than what the state employee is making, that this is just a ridiculous, ridiculous bill. What you're doing here is spending a lot of unnecessary money. If you've got somebody, for example, that can do a report in a different agency. And right now, they do have the time available, and they are able to do it. Then it only makes sense that we use the employees to the best of their ability and to the best of our ability and save the state money. By taking this out, you're saying that they don't even have to check to see if there's anybody that knows how to do the job. I'm going to tell you that, you know, there's over $300 million spent on just professional technical contracts. $360 million on just professional technical contracts. And that number will go a lot higher if you put this provision in here. So you're costing the taxpayers unnecessary money by doing this. It's working very well, as the Department of Administration says, the way it is right now. And if they need to go out, and they already know they don't have the expertise, they can do that. They can do that, but by taking this out, they won't even have to look, even among their own staff, to see if there's somebody that can do this. So then you're letting yourself open for potential conflict of interest, being able to hire a buddy or somebody to do a job. And believe me, I can show you that has happened many times in the state, and I'm sure in other governmental unions and in the private sector as well. So what this is, a little bit of protection. That's all it is a little bit of protection, that if there are people that can do the job, they'll try to get those people first. It doesn't really delay anything in the contracting, because what happens is all they have to do is send their contract to the Department of Administration to review their contract request. All they have to do on that is check off a little box that says that they look to see if there was anybody able and available. They don't even have to prove it. So you are unnecessarily creating some problems here and some extra cost to the state, and there's no reason for it. So anybody that votes for this bill is voting for higher cost to the taxpayer in Minnesota, and I can guarantee you that. So please vote against it.
Senator Thompson.
Madam President, thank you. Maybe there's a bit of a misunderstanding as to what this bill actually does, because it certainly doesn't compel any commissioner or any other state government employee to avoid using current employees from one area of government or another. It simply removes the requirement, and I would certainly expect that any administration would try to do things in the most efficient, low-cost way possible, and obviously that may well be result in current or even former employees doing the jobs or being rehired to do them. Understand, this is no requirement to go outside. This is simply saving people that are making these decisions the time and cost necessary to undergo an analysis to comply with a mandate. This simply allows the folks running our agencies to make the decisions in the best interests of the agency without being compelled to undergo some kind of complicated and potentially lengthy analysis.
To that point, Senator Goodwin, because I do have other people. Senator Goodwin.
To that point, Madam President, I want to ask, I would ask if Senator Thompson would yield, because I don't know of anybody in the state that has asked for this bill. There might be private contractors that have asked for this bill, but I don't know of anybody in the state. So if I'm wrong on that, Senator Thompson, please correct me.
Senator Thompson.
No, I have not been asked specifically by anyone within the state government or within the administration. That being said, as I indicated earlier, no one has, in that capacity, has opposed this legislation, and I suspect that is because if you are a commissioner, you would prefer to be able to exercise this kind of discretion.
Senator Hayden.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise to oppose the bill as well. I think that Senator Goodwin has really laid out really the road and why we shouldn't do it. I will add just a couple of things, is that it appears that our commissioner administration has not only not asked for it, but has sent us a letter saying that he opposes it. and that he is able to manage and is able to manage his workload and the workload of the Department of Administration and other departments through current law. And he also states in his letter that they do sometimes outsource. They do sometimes go out and get other vendors to help them with things in which state employees are unable to do. And so Senator Thompson's kind of presentation on this suggests that there is this onerous, long administrative process in which it is to find to make sure that we don't have other people working in the state that would be able to do the job or be able to take care of the task as it's in front of it. So I'm just not sure, like, how does that work when no one has asked for this reform, no one has said that we are spending a lot of state money, that we're wasting a lot of time, and that we're not efficient. On the contrary, it appears that it is that we are efficient and that we are maximizing all of the productivity of our state employees. And so with that being said, I agree with Senator Goodwin. I think that this is a bill that I don't know where it comes from. I guess it's, if it's from Senator Thompson's analysis of how state government works, but those who do this work each and every day, our newly confirmed commissioner, Commissioner Crunk, has sent us a letter and said this isn't necessary. So I would ask that we would vote no on this bill.
Further discussion on Senate File 2090. Secretary will give Senate File 2090 its third reading.
Senate File Number 2090, a bill for neck relating to state government, third reading.
Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Madam President. This bill is about outsourcing, members. This is about sending Minnesota jobs out of state. Members, this is about not letting our Minnesota workers do the work that they're capable of doing and finding it somewhere else. Can you say China? Can you say India? This is about sending jobs out of state, overseas, anywhere you want to, anywhere you want to categorize it. But this is not a good bill. We don't need this. And the governor has already vetoed this once, so I'm pretty sure it's going to get vetoed again, so I'm not even sure why we're voting on it today.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 2090.
President.
Madam President, point of order.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, we're in the middle of a roll call. There are a lot of people wandering around, looks like gathering in bunches, consulting, perhaps in violation of the rules about...
Thank you, Senator Latz. Please take that as a reminder, members. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 28 ayes and 35 nays, the bill is not passed. Remaining on the special orders, we will go to number 86, House File 2647, Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the amendment made to House File 2647 by the Committee on Rules and Administration in the report adopted April 18, 2012, pursuant to Rule 45, be stricken.
To that motion, Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rule 45, the reason we've stricken and gone with the House language is because, as we discussed earlier when we tabled the bill, we said we would meet together with interested parties and look at the language and redo it to the best of our ability. And the new language in file, House File 2647, does just that.
On Senator Hall's motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Hall, to the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have again the data transparency bill before you. It was requested to lay on the table. Again, we met with all of the stakeholders that we thought we were supposed to and could meet with. Some were unable to make it. That included, and this bill has support from the Department of Administration, the Minnesota City County Association, Mark Anfison, I'm not sure what his new association is, and Rich Neumeister, a citizen lobbyist. The League of Minnesota Cities has stayed neutral on their opinion of the bill. This House file passed in the House 131-0 vote. The bill is intended to close the gap in data practices that has currently caused great publicity in my area and district, Burnsville, Egan, Savage, in School District 191. In your packet, there's a news article that references a situation over there where a sum of over $250,000 was paid out to a dispute settlement. And in excess, of course, $10,000, the amount should be clarified, as it says it should give a specific reason to be provided to the public. And that specific reason in this case was we are avoiding the cost of litigation. The school board members, superintendents, and public officials were asked about the terms of the settlement. The response was the Data Practices Act under current law prohibits us from providing any detailed whatsoever. This reason has understandably provoked many questions in the public. Two main parts to this bill go as follows. Line 1.1, the insertion of complete, and 2.3, the insertion of the phrase all of the. The second part to this is the addition, which specifies in 3.1 through 3.12 the positions that are defined in the management, as you can look to, the management that it'll have impact towards. I believe the current law allows for a lack of accountability, even perhaps a lack of responsibility, in the use of public dollars in our school districts. The public deserves a reasonable and pertinent information when a payment over $10,000 is paid out in a dispute settlement. Remember, we are talking about public money. So with that, I stand for your questions and ask for your green vote.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Madam President. Well, I appreciate Senator Hall bringing this bill forward. I am also very nervous about this final bill that's before us here. We had concerns with it in Judiciary Committee when we first heard it, and so Senator Hall was going to work on it with the different groups, and then so it passed out, even though there were concerns about it, and then he worked with some of the groups, but not all of the groups, and so now we have some language here that we're still not sure is what really is what is needed. It's always problematic to do data practices bills on the Senate floor. It's problematic to do it in even small groups where you don't have all of the parties involved, because a lot of times the solutions are not, are maybe worse than the problem was in the first place. So I do have concerns about this bill. It does expand the information that the public is going to have access to all data. This is a lot of information that is now going to be made public in some very personal and private situations. So I understand that the public wants this information and should have some of it, but this bill does go too far in some of these ways, and it really does need more work. It just needs more time to get the groups together to talk about this, and we really need to think about these issues that we're doing and what the consequences are. The House heard the bill without knowing that there were these consequences, and so that's why it passed out of there so quickly. But we really do need to be thoughtful about these data practices issues. So I do still have some concerns about this bill, and I encourage members to vote no so that we can really think about it and do the right thing for this issue.
Further discussion on House File 2647, Senator Latz.
Madam President and members, from the information that I have received, not all of the stakeholders are on board with this legislation. I've specifically heard from Minnesota School Boards Association representatives, Minnesota School Administrators representatives, and Education Minnesota, that they were not at the table in devising the language that's before us today, and that they have not agreed that this is the best way to move forward. And when it left the Judiciary Committee, it left with the explicit representation that the language would be developed as a consensus language among the stakeholders. And in order to move the bill forward, we pass it out of Judiciary with that understanding. That has not happened, members. It is now before us still as a bill that has not brought that consensus together. And to me, that is quite troubling. And if just because a meeting was called and not everyone could be there, if in fact everyone received appropriate notice, that they are therefore said to have lost their chance to become a part of the consensus or to be involved in crafting the final product, that's a pretty weak argument, members. And there are a lot of bills that we passed on this floor that have waited and waited through the committee process and through the floor process until all of the parties could sit down and really hammer out something that everyone felt would be workable. And in fact, the legislators here often rely upon the expertise of those stakeholders for that very purpose. Well, that has not happened here, members. I don't think this bill is really ready yet to be passed. And I will tell you my understanding of, first of all, it's not typical protocol to cite the vote in the other body as an attempt to be persuasive here on the Senate floor. But secondly, as I understand it, this bill came up on the other body's floor as kind of a surprise to the stakeholders that were involved in watching the bill. So they didn't really have an opportunity or enough notice to be able to alert representatives that there were still some stakeholder issues with this bill. Members, I agree with the main purpose of this bill. I think it's important for the public to be informed about the reasons for decisions such as was made by the Burnsville School District to pay a large settlement to a departing employee. And often there are very good reasons. Usually, I would say, in almost every case, there are very good reasons because there's very substantial legal exposure of the district, not just to avoid costs of litigation, but because they could face the very real potential of serious damages if they were to proceed to defend against a claim and lose. So there are good reasons why these settlements are paid, and I think the public deserves to know. But there are times, members, when good politics do not make good policy. When the language in the law, particularly as it relates to data practices questions, makes a really, really big difference when we've got to get it right. And I would submit to the Senate today that the language we have before us right now for consideration just isn't right yet and really needs some more work. Members, I wonder if, first of all, I want to point out at least the title that was in the underlying bill was not accurate, because the title said it was a bill relating to education, when in fact this applies far beyond our school district. It applies to all political subdivisions' chief administrative officers. All political subdivisions. That means every county, school district, city, town, all cities with a population of 7,500 or more people, or a county with a population more than 5,000. So this applies very, very broadly. And I don't say that critically, just to suggest don't rely on the title of the bill as it originally showed up on our computers this morning for reliance on what is the content of the bill. But I wonder if the author of the bill would yield for a question or two.
Senator Hall. Senator Hall, will you yield? Senator Hall will yield. Senator Latz.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Hall, you identified line 2.3 in the bill and stated the language that was being added to the bill, but without putting it in the whole sentence. So I wonder if you could explain the language: except the agreement must include all of the, that's new language, all of the specific reasons for the agreement if it involves a payment of more than $10,000 of public money. Senator Hall, how broad is the language all of the? And is there anything that might not be included in that?
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Latz. Appreciate your comments. On that, you know, it's the way I look at it is how broad is specific reasons? How broad was it in the past? We are trying to clarify it, and by telling people all of the specifics so they don't have to use excuses that say, well, it's not prohibited underneath the Data Practicing Act, we can, you know, go ahead and give the excuse that they give. I guess our intention is, like you and like others that were involved in the initial conversations, our intentions are to clarify the language. We had the different groups come together. As I was just reminded of, Tom Grunhofer, who was representing at the time the school board, because Grace Kelleher could not be there. You know, we thought and had everybody come together, and we believe that the language is the best that we can get to right now, which is what they thought, of course, 15 years ago. So we're doing our best to get specific enough that people cannot get out of what they are trying to get out of. And litigation, if they're going to litigate, they're going to litigate. They're going to push the measures and try to do whatever they can to get out. The public deserves to have transparency, and I think we all agree with that. And nobody should be really protected unless it's under good reasons, which are protected by the federal laws. So I think we're in a good spot here.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, Senator Hall, the bill as it left the Judiciary Committee provided a specific exception for information that would reveal the health condition of the employee. And in fact, when we struck the Rule 45 substitution here, we eliminated that language. Can you explain why it is, at least under the state law that is proposed for us to adopt, even the health condition of the employee would be required to be disclosed?
Thank you, Senator Latz.
Senator Hall.
And Madam Chair, my understanding is it is covered by the HIPAA law and other statutes that I've been given security that that's all taken care of. And that's the reason they did not put that in, because as you remember, originally we had put that in and they said, this is redundant and you're not going to need that.
Senator Limmer. Senator Latz, I think Senator Limmer had something to add to the answer.
Thank you, Madam President. On that particular point, Senator Latz,
I just had a discussion with our research people regarding that very same issue. And you may not know this, or maybe you do, but HIPAA law would supersede any revealing of any medical record anyway. And so that to me is not an issue.
Senator Letts.
Well, Madam President, that may or may not be the case. I know at least one lawyer who has been involved in this kind of litigation has expressed to me that he would not rely upon federal HIPAA law to protect his client's interests with regard to sensitive medical information. Number two, I'm concerned that we are proposing here to put in explicit state statute language that we know or believe would be superseded by federal law, and why we wouldn't state as a matter of state policy that we do not intend to require the disclosure of information that is prohibited from disclosure by federal law. We could at least have something to that effect in here, members. And third, this could have an effect on the settlement negotiations or the litigation strategy between the government agency that's involved and the employee that's involved. So, for example, as often happens in the course of litigation, in preparation for litigation, an employee or a party may seek and obtain a comprehensive neuropsychological examination and evaluation, for example, as a part of a disability discrimination claim or other type of claim, a Family Medical Leave Act claim may involve something like that as well. Minnesota Human Rights Act has a state counterpart to the federal disability laws. And it may contain very serious and sensitive information relating to the mental health status, emotional status of a particular individual. And that may be introduced in the course of a hearing or a proceeding relating to the proposed termination or litigation over it. If there is some doubt as to whether HIPAA would protect that information, then it could affect whether that highly relevant information would even be introduced into such a proceeding. And that would be terribly unfair to a person who, maybe for reasons related to that information, has been fired from their job in violation of state and federal law. So that's one concern. And so let me ask if Senator Hall could answer, or maybe Senator Limmer could answer the question. If in the course of a hearing relating to the termination, the terminated employee introduces a comprehensive neuropsychological evaluation from medical doctors or from PhDs who are properly licensed professionals in this field, and in the middle of that hearing, the parties decide to settle the case, does that information, if we set aside the question of HIPAA, would this bill require that information to be publicly disclosed? And keep in mind, it says all of these. So that would mean every word in that neuropsychological evaluation.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. To Senator Letts's question, Minnesota statute chapter 13.384 already makes medical data private data. But I wanted to go back to one of the points that Senator Letts made previously about there not being 100% support for this bill among all of the stakeholders. I know that Senator Hall did his best to notify stakeholders, include them in these conversations, worked with as many folks that came to the table as possible. But I have to say this, members, if we required 100% agreement on every bill around here, we would never pass anything, and there would be no principle at stake at all. Because then any one person or interest group that had an opposition could use that opposition to defeat any measure that we were going to vote on. So I don't think that's a very good standard for any bill. It's certainly not a good standard for this bill, because what weighs in the balance is the public trust. The members of the public should have an opportunity to review these facts and understand these types of agreements so they can hold their elected officials accountable for the results.
Madam President.
Senator Latz.
I would agree with Senator Ortman on every point that she made, including the importance of this public disclosure, except that we passed this bill out of the Judiciary Committee on the explicit representation that we would not see it again until all of the stakeholders had come together and agreed on the language. And I've got stakeholders coming up to me in the last day or two saying, we didn't agree to this. We weren't included at the table on this. Members, no, we never expect universal agreement, but there have been plenty of bills around here that we have waited until there was consensus among all of the stakeholders before we brought a bill to the floor, before we decided to pass something. And I still don't have an explicit answer to my question, but let me ask, you know, there could be months and months of negotiations going on before a settlement is reached, even stages of litigation. So when it says that all of the information must be made public, all of the specific reasons for the agreement must be made public, does that mean every deposition transcript? Does that mean every communication between attorneys? Does that mean the entire personnel file? Does that mean all of the other information? And members, what's the consequence if a sentence or a paragraph is left out? Could Senator Hall explain, or someone else, Senator Ortman or Senator Limmer, explain what is the liability of any of the parties to this if they fail to disclose all of the specific reasons?
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. To at least a couple of Senator Latz's points, that was definitely a compound argument, Senator Latz, and so I'll do my best to address the ones I can, and then I'll get back to you about the remainder. But first, any court that we're going to apply this language and this requirement, and any Minnesotan that would be working to follow the law, could be advised by a plain, common sense reading of the language, which says that the complete terms of any agreement settling any dispute must include all of the specific reasons. And so I think that if you look at page 2.1, subparagraph 6 there, the plain meaning is appropriate and would be applied here. I don't think that it's that hard to understand that what we're trying to do is make sure that the terms of the agreement, including the reasons for the termination, are included in the disclosure. So I don't think that's very hard to understand. And then back to the idea that we should expect a universal agreement is just not right. I'm a member of the Judiciary Committee. I understand that this bill went out with the understanding that Senator Hall would work with the stakeholder agreements and reach an agreement before coming back. However, to the best of his ability, he did that. He reached out to them. He met with those that came to the table. If anybody is going to hold out here, is that the basis for holding up a good bill, one that Minnesotans expect us to pass? They were outraged in Burnsville. Not just the residents of Burnsville. The residents of the state were outraged that that information was not available and state law was in the way. So members, we need to accommodate the residents. We need to accommodate the stakeholders that came to the table to work on these issues. We need to accommodate the members of the Judiciary Committee who did not bring up some of these objections at that time and only now are trying to tank this bill because they've heard from specific special interest groups.
Madam President.
Senator Latz.
I guess this will be a lesson to the members of the Judiciary Committee that in the future we should not pass a bill out on the representation that the language will be worked on and fixed with all of the stakeholders before we see it on the floor of this Senate. And I will tell you now that I will not support passing a bill out of the Judiciary Committee again because I cannot rely on the representation that was made, such as with this bill before us today. And let that not be an excuse for the members of the Senate to say that we're going to pass it now just because the public is screaming for public disclosure. Yes, they are, and they deserve to have this disclosure, but we have a responsibility to our constituents and to the employees of the political subdivisions of the state of Minnesota and to all the elected officials in the state of Minnesota to get this language right. If you believe that this language is right, then vote for the bill. But if you have some serious questions about whether this is going to work as intended and whether this is not going to set up for liability exposure, the very governments that are dealing with this or the parties that are dealing with this, which liability, by the way, if translated to dollar damages, will be taxpayer dollars also, then you should vote against this bill. Because this bill needs more work, members. And frankly, I still didn't get an answer, frankly, to almost all the questions that I've asked, which is proof positive that this still needs work. We had pretty good language coming out of Judiciary. We did it in about 30 seconds, members, at the very end of the committee, that we added into the bill and said, this is what we think is a reasonable language, but yeah, keep working on it. Now it comes back here to the floor without one reference to the language we sent out of Judiciary. Almost, it's all gone. It's all gone, the language that is supposedly replaced by all of the specific reasons for the agreement. So members, don't plan on coming before the Judiciary Committee and asking for permission to keep working on a bill's language after it's been at our stop and try to convince us to vote for the bill so it can keep moving and expect to get my support if this is the way it's going to be handled in the future.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Latz, I've been listening carefully. I wish you had that same passion when the bill came through the Judiciary Committee. I think we had a lot of discussion then. I can't remember if you voted for it or against it. Maybe in light of your comments today, you probably voted against it. But nevertheless, the bill was passed out of the committee. It had its hearing. And I thought we had a pretty good discussion regarding it. Now, you can disagree with the bill. You can even have comments about whether or not the stakeholders did not participate. We had proper notice, as we try to do in all things in the Judiciary Committee. That's a very important issue for me, at least. But as I listen to your discussion, I think you are raising some points that I would feel should be beyond question of whether or not we've adequately covered the issue of the HIPAA issue, the medical privacy issue. And quite honestly, I'm satisfied, but if you still have a major concern regarding that and perhaps a couple other issues, I would suggest maybe Senator Hall lay the bill on the table. We can have a discussion. We can, and that also gives some of the stakeholders another opportunity, finally, to listen to the request of Senator Hall in his desire to meet with them. They missed the memo, or they just plain couldn't get there. I don't know. Maybe they had a flat tire. I don't know what it was. But Senator Hall, I know that you want to be above board on this particular bill, and I know that this is an important issue, but revealing to the public what goes on some things is rather important. And I think, Senator Hall, if you would be gracious enough to simply lay the bill, to progress the bill, we can hopefully resolve some of these issues, put a comfort level to all the members as much as we can, and maybe then again, maybe you still disagree with the bill. Then that's fine. Then we'll have our vote up, down. But Senator Hall, would you consider doing that?
Senator Hall, or Senator Rest, is it a point of order?
Madam President, would you remind the members that their comments are to be directed to the President and not to individual members? I think we need a reminder of that in this particular discussion, especially since a member was not asked to yield.
Thank you, Senator Rest. Senator Hall?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I would consider that. I guess before I do that, I do want to agree with Senator Latz in one aspect, and that is on line 1.2. I would move an oral amendment to strike out education and put in data practices.
Senator Hall, could you repeat the oral amendment?
Sure. The oral amendment would be to remove on line 1.2 the word education and insert data practices in the title, that is.
Senator Hall has offered an oral amendment. The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Hall moves to amend House File Number 2647 as follows. Line 1.2 in the title, strike the word education, insert the words data practices.
To that amendment, Senator Hall.
Thank you.
Well, I think that clarifies in agreement with Senator Latz there. So it gives a better definition.
Further discussion to the amendment. All in favor of to the amendment? All in favor of Senator Hall's oral amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Further discussion, Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With a hearty discussion here and in hearing some of the remarks in defense, I thought we did our best to bring folks together. I can see that may not have happened the way some would like it to have. And we'd be glad to meet with whomever would like to. So I would move that we would lay House File 2647 on the table.
Senator Hall has moved to lay House File 2647 on the table. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. We will move to number, we have an excuse. Pursuant to Rule 12.5, Senator Carlson moved the following members be excused for a conference committee on House File 2244 at 1:40 p.m. Senators Cruz, Senator Bach, Senator Carlson, Senator Olson, and Senator Thompson. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving to number 34 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 2098, Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Madam President. I have the A4 amendment.
Senator Sparks offers the A4 amendment. The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Sparks moves to amend Senate File Number 2098 as follows. Delete everything after the enacting clause. This is the A4 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Madam President and members. This amendment represents a compromise between the administration and Dairyland and Basin Power Cooperatives. I would like to thank Deputy Commissioner Bill Grant, Division of Energy Resources, and his staff for working with us on this language. It secures their ability to determine resource adequacy while offering an alternative and streamlined regulatory filing process. The amended language creates an alternative reporting requirement for an electrical cooperative that has at least 80% of its members' distribution cooperatives located outside of Minnesota and provides less than 4% of electricity annually sold at retail in Minnesota. The cooperative would be required to annually submit a report to the PUC that must include projected demand levels for the next 15 years and generation resources to meet any projected generation deficiencies, and also do a presentation of the report in a manner established by the Public Utilities Commission. Members, this compromise will offer significant time and cost savings for the cooperatives and still meet the goals and objections of the Division of Energy Resources for resource planning purposes. I would appreciate your support of the vote on this amendment and for your support on the bill. Thank you, Madam President.
Further discussion, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise in strong support of this Senate File 2098 and would like to thank Senator Sparks for his work on this and to thank the Department of Commerce, DER, Department of Energy Resources, and the other groups, the co-ops and munis that have worked to make these changes in the Integrated Resource Plan that have been badly needed going forward here. It is very burdensome. There's more paperwork in Minnesota than any other states combined for some of these smaller co-ops that have less than 4% of their retail sales in Minnesota. So these negotiations have been going on for about 18 months with the department. They just came to an agreement. I believe it was yesterday or the day before, Senator Sparks. And this is a big deal for these co-ops and their munis, and it's going to save a tremendous amount of money, labor, expense going forward. And I, too, appreciate them being willing to eliminate and streamline this reporting process. It will save money for the ratepayers going down the road, and appreciate a green vote. Thank you.
Further discussion on the A4 amendment. Seeing none, Senator Sparks renews his motion the A4 amendment be adopted. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 2098. Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 2098 its third reading.
Senate File Number 2098, a bill for an act relating to utilities, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 2098. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 65 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. 13th order of business, announcements of Senate interest. Senator Vanderveer.
Members, the Local Government and Elections Committee will meet in room 15 at 2:30. Thank you.
I do have several excuses. Without objection, the following members will be excused. Senator Limmer from 12:20 to 12:40, Senator Brown, Senator Dame, Senator Magnus from 12:45 to 1:20, and Senator Perry all day. Without objection, they are excused. Further announcements, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. If I could get the members' attention, I'd like to ask for a moment of personal privilege, please.
Member Senator Ingebrigtsen has asked for
a
point of personal privilege. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, I would like to take a moment to recognize the peaceful passing yesterday of Dr. Don McMillan, who was the president of the Minnesota Outdoor Heritage Alliance. Since the 1960s, Don has been a tireless volunteer leader on hunting and angling issues. Don's passion was getting youth and the next generation to the outdoors. He was also the past president of the Safari Club International and worked on issues in Washington, D.C. He was an advocate for the Legacy Amendment and the Lassard Sams Outdoor Heritage forming a couple years ago. Members, this tribute is more than just words. Don was able to see us recently pass the Lassard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council recommendation in a bipartisan fashion, 63-0, and members, it was bipartisan and unanimous last year as well. It's a lot of work that he was able to see us do on his behalf. Members, the great state of Minnesota lost possibly one of the most dedicated volunteers that I know. Please join me, members, in a moment of silence in an hour in honor of Dr. Don McMillan.
Please rise for a moment of silence. Thank you, members. I do have one additional excuse. Without objection, the following members will be excused. Senator Ortman from 12:30 to 1 o'clock. Further announcements, Senator Rest.
Madam President, I wonder if the Majority Leader would yield for a question.
Senator St. John will yield. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator St. John, with regard to the litigation that the Senate is involved in currently, is there a written contract or letter of engagement between the Senate and the attorney who is representing the Senate?
Senator Senjum.
Madam President, respectfully, I'll be happy to visit with Senator Rest offline, but we are limited in what we ought to be talking about in that particular area. So I'm going to decline answering right now, but happy to visit with her offline. And she might also visit with the Minority Leader.
Senator Rest.
Madam President, with all due respect, I believe that the body has a right to an answer to that particular question. And as a matter of fact, according to Senate rules, if it was something that was signed by the Secretary, it is a public document according to Rule 35. Let's see. I'm sorry, not 35. 53? Anyway, under the duties of the Secretary, 51. 51.3, the Secretary is the agent for the Senate for the purchase of supplies and services. the Secretary's record on purchases of supplies and services are open for inspection. Seems to me it's a simple answer. Is there a written contract or letter of engagement between the attorney and the Senate? Senator Senjum.
Madam President, so far as I'm aware, that's at this point privileged information. I'm not going to be able to help. Happy to visit with Senator Rest offline.
Senator Rest.
Madam President, I object strenuously to Senator Senjum's behavior.
Further announcements, Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I do now move that the Senate adjourn until Monday, April 23rd at 12 o'clock noon. 12 o'clock noon.
Senator, just before that, we have one additional excuse. Without objection, the following members will be excused. Senator Gazelka from 12:30 to 12:45. Without objection, they are excused. Senator Senjum renews his motion that we adjourn until Monday, April 23rd at 12 noon. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. We are adjourned.